I've been doing radio for a long, long time, and every day when I search for the stories I want to talk about, as I look through all the various sources that are available to me, I always come across at least one story with some new research showing something that conflicts with what research said before. I'll give you an example. Today, there's a story about divorce. Some researchers in New Jersey at Montclair State University have come out with a piece of research that says staying together for the kids might do more harm than good. It might be better to get divorced for the sake of the kids, which is 180 degrees from what we always heard, which is, you know, staying together and having a two-parent home is going to be better for the kids. Now, I'll be honest with you. I don't care about this story. I only bring it up as an example of what our next guest writes about. His name is David H. Friedman. He's a science and business journalist for Inc. magazine, who's also written for The Atlantic and Newsweek and The New York Times, Harvard Business Review, Fast Company, Science Magazine, Wired Magazine, Self Magazine, lots of others. And he has a new book out called Wrong, Why Experts Keep Failing Us and How to Know When Not to Trust Them. And under experts, there's a little asterisk. And at the bottom of the cover, the asterisk includes scientists, finance wizards, doctors, relationship gurus, celebrity CEOs, high-powered consultants, health officials, and many more, including, no doubt, these researchers in New Jersey. David, welcome to the Big 550 KTRS.
Thank you very much.
Is this the sort of thing you're talking about when you talk about experts?
It's a great example of it, for sure. Absolutely. I think when we think about expressions like the experts say, according to experts, we're often talking about scientists, researchers, academics. And let me emphasize, I mean, I have infinite respect for these people. I'm very pro-science. But the fact of the matter is they get most of their stuff wrong, and they have documented this themselves.
Yeah, and eventually somebody's going to come out with something that says the opposite, and we'll trust that person for a few minutes until we get the next study after that.
That's right, and there's nothing wrong with the fact that science kind of gropes along and stumbles along and says
right.
This and then says that. That's the way science works. The point of the matter is we should be much, much more aware of it than we are, and when this stuff is presented to the public, there really should be some warning. I've suggested that these kinds of reports should have a little label like cigarette packs saying that this stuff is probably wrong and possibly harmful to you if you actually listen to it.
Well, let's talk about the harmful part of this, because you write in the book a lot about medicine and dieting, two fields that we hear a lot about and which are always full of conflicting information. Eat this for good heart health. Drink that for good heart health. Oh, wait, eat this for good heart health. Don't drink that for good heart. I mean, I'm just giving examples here, but you have many of them in the book.
Yeah, there's an embarrassment of riches when it comes to trying to pick this stuff and how much harm it can do to us. Or just perhaps waste our time, too. But, just in the news, in fact, I was looking at the news this morning, you have the drug Avandia, which millions of people have been taking for diabetes for well over a decade. Turns out to now they've really proven that it's strongly linked to strokes and heart disorders, often fatal. So even the drugs that our doctors prescribe to us very often, as we saw with Vioxx, turn out to potentially kill us. And when it comes to what we eat, what kind of exercise we should do, this sort of stuff really goes back and forth, and we're left with no clear picture of really what we're supposed to do.
Where are the fail-safes for these systems, and in particular for medicine? You mentioned Vioxx. That was the example that I was going to mention here, a drug that was on the market for years and then suddenly was deemed dangerous. Aren't there supposed to be levels of testing before any consumer is allowed to pop a pill in their mouth?
And there certainly is a great deal of testing. The fact of the matter is, Testing really doesn't work nearly as well as most of us think that it does. And scientists themselves, again, have documented this, that this isn't me doing some shocking expose. This is me reporting what scientists themselves report, which is these tests tend to be very heavily flawed. They don't translate well to the public at large. A lot of the testing is animal testing. When it's tested on people, they're often small studies. The big studies typically don't go on long enough to really tell what's going on. And really, all the fail-safes that medicine and other science set up are insufficient. The only one that really works are very, very long periods of time. That's decades to really know what's going on.
I should point out that I am pro-science and fully skeptical about most things in life as well. My wife and I are big fans of the TV show House, and he's, you know, this acclaimed diagnostician who at the end of every show has an epiphany and gets it right and realizes, oh, she must have used glue in kindergarten, and that you know, has turned a 38-year-old woman into an epileptic, you know, whatever it is. And along the way, of course, you know, they've removed her pancreas, they've done a graft, they've done this and this and this and this. And, of course, it's all played up for dramatic effect. The thing is, a lot of that does actually happen in medicine because they're not 100% sure what's right until they stumble upon it. Now, that's the same thing that happens with a lot of experts, isn't it?
It is, and this stuff can kill us. And the thing is, if you get doctors talking amongst themselves, they're extremely open about this, that they're often guessing with their diagnoses. There's nothing; it's not their fault. I mean, that's just the state of medicine. There's most of what's going on, the vast majority of what's going on with the human body, most of us scientists just don't understand at this point. So how could doctors know? The problem is that doctors are trained traditionally to project complete confidence, that they are taught to believe that the last thing a patient wants to hear from a doctor is, I don't know, or this might work or might not. And so a lot of doctors, probably most doctors, are more confident than really their knowledge really warrants. And so we're misled into thinking there's certainty when there isn't. And there should be no shame in not knowing for sure. And we should be aware of it so we can be smarter about how we take part in the decision of what happens to us.
You know, I'm reminded of the Jerry Seinfeld bit where he says sometimes his car breaks down, he pulls over to the side of the road, he opens up the hood. He knows nothing about cars. He says, you know what I'm looking for? A big on-off switch in the off position that I can turn back on. Same thing when you go to the doctor. The doctor doesn't have you undress and then on your body there's something that says gallbladder, you know, flashing, telling them what's wrong. Sometimes it's going to take them a while to figure it out.
That's right. And in fact, that's typically the case. And probably most of the interventions that doctors do don't do much good. And it's been documented that about 1 out of 12 times a doctor's diagnosis actually does significant harm to a patient. And again, that's not really criticism of doctors. It's just that we should understand that and the field should be more open about that. And it's even worse in other fields. I mean, in economics, in finance, we get screwed left and right when we're given information that we're told is perhaps a sure thing or a very likely thing, when in fact there's tremendous uncertainty behind this stuff, and it really misleads us.
The Big 550 KTRS, Paul Harris talking with David H. Friedman about his book, Wrong, Why Experts Keep Failing Us and How to Know When Not to Trust Them. Let's follow along in this financial theme. All day long, every day on CNBC and now on Fox Business Channel, there are experts from high finance sitting there pontificating about what has happened, what is happening, what's going to happen. I think the biggest problem we have with that, and frankly all television punditry, and probably non-television punditry as well, is a complete lack of accountability. Nobody who goes back later and says, oh, by the way, this guy over here, John, he's the one who got it 100% wrong and we're never having him back.
That's right. That's not how experts are judged in pretty much any field, and certainly not in finance. You know, what makes a financial expert successful? Well, the bottom line is, do we watch them or not? Do we pay attention? Do we invest in what they tell us to invest in? So in other words, what they're rewarded for is being convincing, for being confident, for being charismatic, for sounding certain. We reward experts for that. What do we expect? In a way, we get the lousy advice that we deserve. The one thing that's been documented over and over and over again for well over a century about financial advice is that, on average, it does not beat the market. And yet we keep going back for more of that crap.
So as much as Jim Cramer keeps shouting and pushing buttons and boo-hying everybody, it doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, I think what you're saying is, as long as you make some sort of pronouncement, whatever it is, right or wrong, as long as you keep making them and you're good at it, not good in terms of accurate, but good in terms of appealing to the camera or the radio or in print or wherever it is, you probably have a job for life.
You sure do, yeah. I mean, in the end, it's ratings that count, right? I mean, that's what is going to keep Jim Cramer on the air. Are people paying attention to him? No one's going to go back and try to tell. In fact, even when you try to go back and look at experts' records, it's still really hard to tell, because what happens is we can go back and see which financial expert got it right for the past 10 years. The problem is sheer luck says that out of thousands of experts, someone's going to get it right just by luck every single time, and it in no way means that they're more likely to be right the next time. And in fact, it often means they're taking some risky strategy that temporarily worked, like keep investing in real estate, and sooner or later that's going to turn out to be exactly wrong.
So do you blame the experts for the financial problems, the recession we find ourselves in now?
Well, sadly, I think there's plenty of blame to go wrong here. So yes, I do blame them, but I blame plenty of other people too. I blame the government, and let's not try to get out of this ourselves. I mean, you and I, and everybody else, we're all guilty for listening to these experts, for not working harder to seek out that better, less charismatic, less certain advice. We love to hear the simple solutions, and we hate to listen to the more wishy-washy stuff, which actually is better advice.
Yeah, you know, I often joke that when it comes to losing weight, we actually have it boiled down to four words: eat less, exercise more. But for Americans, four words is still too many. We want two words: take pill.
Isn't that true? Yeah, everybody's waiting for the obesity pill, of course, or the gimmick. If you eat a lot of this stuff in your diet, then you'll lose weight, no sweat. You know,
yeah.
We don't want to do the work. A lot of it comes down to laziness. I mean, we're just trying to not work hard, not be disciplined. We don't want to search out great advice. We don't want to work hard at a diet and exercise. I mean, who can blame us? Of course we feel that way, but we really have to face up to the fact that there aren't easy answers in life, and sometimes we have to take that tougher road if we want better results.
David H. Friedman's book is Wrong: Why Experts Keep Failing Us and How to Know When Not to Trust Them. When we come back, we'll talk about the media's role in all of this, the role of the Internet, and the idiocy of crowds. I'm Paul Harris. This is the John Brown Show on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Big 550 KTRS. I'm Paul Harris, talking with David H. Friedman, journalist who's written a book called Wrong: Why Experts Keep Failing Us and How to Know When Not to Trust Them. We've talked about the financial community and the medical and scientific communities. Let's talk about our own community, which you alluded to in the previous segment, David, and that is the media. The media's role, talking more to pundits and guests these days, particularly on the 24-hour news networks. There are a lot more pundits than reporters, a lot more opinions than facts. Is that contributing to the culture you describe in the book?
Yeah, it certainly is. We've got scientists turning out very flawed findings, and they're presented as if they're not as uncertain as they really are in research journals. And then what happens, we as journalists look this stuff over, and we pick the most exciting of it, what sounds like the biggest breakthrough, the most interesting, the most certain, the simplest solution, and this is what we broadcast. So, in other words, we take the worst of the worst, and this is what we transmit to the public. And then on top of that, we add in errors, we misquote people, we misunderstand what's really going on. We have all our own biases as journalists, and so we add a whole other layer of error and bias onto the problem.
And very little perspective.
Often very little perspective. Obviously, as with everything else, some journalists are better than others. But yes, we have our own flaws as human beings and as professionals. And so the more layers that this so-called expertise has to go through, the more problems there are when it finally gets to those of us who consume the expertise.
You know, I also see what I call the numbered bullet points approach to journalism. You pick up any magazine or even look on their websites these days, and it's the 10 most fantastic this and the 16 ways to do that. You actually listed three of them in your book here on page 75, Scientific American, Seven Paths to Regulating Privacy, Fast Company, The Six Myths of Creativity, American Lawyer, Four Essential Elements of a Strong Law Firm Culture. Now, as a journalist and also a person who's writing about experts being wrong, is this that laziness that you were referring to?
Well, it's one form of it, yes, absolutely. Again, I mean, really, a much more accurate way to present expert advice in almost any subject would probably follow along the lines of the 373 things that might apply to some people some of the time if any of the 94 factors apply to you.
Right.
But what are we going to do with advice like that? I mean, I have to admit, even though that would probably be much more right, it's very hard to use. It doesn't really solve our problems. And, of course, we want experts to solve our problems. And that's where a lot of this difficulty stems from.
Nor is it going to increase click-throughs on your website.
Boy, it sure isn't. You know, and I have a chapter, in fact, in my book that I call something along the lines of the 11 surefire rules of how to tell whether expert advice is right. And I did that as a joke. But it's funny, a lot of people have taken it seriously and actually have transmitted the fact that I give the 11 steps you need to go through. That's not true, folks. I was kidding.
Let's talk about the role of the Internet. Where everyone thinks they're an expert, not because they actually are an expert, but because they Googled something and read the first article that was linked to.
That's a real nightmare. Google is wonderful. I use it 7,000 times a day. I wouldn't be half the journalist I am, for what that's worth, without Google. Yet it is truly a nightmare, especially if you're going to focus on the stuff that comes out at top, which it turns out most people do. Google has no way of knowing what you're really looking for. It has absolutely no way of distinguishing great advice from the worst possible advice out there. And the problem is that online, yes, there's terrific advice out there, but it's swamped by a much higher amount of terrible wrong stuff, and Google is as likely to bring that terrible stuff to the top as anything else.
And yet you write about how you use the Internet to solve some problems thanks to a lot of people answering questions about things that you wanted to know about. You looked online for answers, and you found some, didn't you?
It's the first thing I do. If I have an ache or a pain, if something goes wrong in my car, if I break something in the house this morning, right now as we speak, I'm smoking a chicken, grilling a chicken, not smoking like a cigarette, but yeah, on the grill. And the first thing I did was look up online how to do it. Well, the thing is, I in a way, I'm sort of a professional searcher. It's a big part of my job. I'm pretty good at it. But I spend a lot of time. I go through a lot of stupid advice before I can track down the right stuff. And I really fear that the average person who doesn't spend as much time on it as I do isn't going to be able to do that.
I have used online forums many times, not that I have actually gone to the forum, specifically that forum, and asked a question, but when I've Googled something about a problem I have, let's say a piece of equipment breaks down, or, you know, why isn't my iPhone doing this thing today that it did yesterday, I go on there, and often you find in some of these very technical forums people who've explained it in very easy layman's terms that I find very, very helpful. Don't you use those as well?
I use those all the time. Unfortunately, I also find that a lot of those easy layman explanations are awful. They're wrong. They're just plain wrong. That happens to me all the time. And it's not easy to see that that's the case, because typically on these forums, you'll find even sometimes in the same thread, although sometimes in different threads, exactly opposite explanations or very different explanations.
Yeah.
They can't both be right. They contradict. So, I mean, that's proof right there that something's wrong. How do you tell which one it is? I mean, the whole reason you're there is because you don't know. If you knew how to tell the good from the bad, you wouldn't have the problem in the first place. So I think there's really the opportunity to get misled by these forums as well as to be helped.
Well, that leads us to one of the chapters in your book called The Idiocy of Crowds. Explain that.
Well, we're really become convinced that that if a lot of people agree on something, it might be true, that the good answers tend to come through a crowd to the top. And, of course, there was that wonderful book, The Wisdom of Crowds, which really is a great book, that points out how, in many cases, that really works. But in general, the fact of the matter is that there are decades of research that shows that communities, large crowds of people, tend to have exactly the opposite effect. It tends to be the worst ideas, the wrongest stuff, that comes to the top. I mean, well, take a typical situation. I've been on a jury a few times, and I'm really stunned at the fact that the person who tends to have the most influence in a jury room is typically the most pig-headed, most stubborn person who has paid the least attention to the evidence. And I think that's very, very typical of what happens in crowds.
And the rest of the crowd goes along because that's the loudest and most opinionated person?
I think most of us are sort of a little embarrassed about going against the whole crowd. I mean, there's this classic candid camera stunt where a person gets in an elevator and everybody's facing the wrong way in the elevator towards the back wall.
Mm-hmm.
And every single time, the person who's not in on the joke will end up turning around and joining the crowd and putting their back to the door. And I think most of us are like that.
The book is called Wrong, Why Experts Keep Failing Us and How to Know When Not to Trust Them. And under experts, you can list scientists and finance wizards, doctors, relationship gurus, celebrity CEOs, high-powered consultants, health officials, and probably radio and TV broadcasters as well. David H. Friedman, terrific work. I really enjoyed the book, and I had a great time talking to you today. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.